You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
And welcome. This is another episode of To the Journey.
To the Journey!
My name is Charlene Schmidt, and I'm one of your co-hosts for this show, but with me as he is every single week is...
Tristan Riddell.
So, unlike what we previewed at the end of last week's show, we are not going to be doing a Funniest Moments episode. The reason why? Guess what? We've already done it.
And folks, don't judge us too harshly, because this is episode 90. And we've been doing this for a while now, and we do this every week, and we've taken a few weeks off. That means that it's been over 2 years since we started this podcast, and we're bound to repeat ourselves, but we try not to, and so we're not going to today.
Right. We realized this, of course, today, this morning, as we were planning things out, and decided, okay, oopsie, we'd better not try to put a spin on it to where this episode is going to be too similar to one we've already done. And so we're changing the subject entirely. If you do want to listen to some funny moments, we had episode 44 last year. It's titled You Elitist Munchkins, and we can talk about funnies there. So we're going to do a little bit of yin and yang. We did funny. And so Tristan Gowers on Twitter suggested both funny and saddest moments. We're going to do the saddest moments since we've done the funny. And that is what we're going to do this week. But before we get into that, you mentioned something on the other side of the room, Tristan, that you wanted to talk about.
Yes, an article was given to me by Matt Rushing, and it's on majorspoilers.com, and it was written by Jason Inman, and it's labeled 5 Best Star Trek Episodes All Non-Trek Fans Should Watch. And I was just really intrigued by this because we are always talking about this, and not just specifically with Voyager. I mean, pretty much when you become a Star Trek fan and you've been a Star Trek fan for a while, all you're thinking about is how can I get more people to watch what I love? And I think every podcast has a list of episodes that you should show to a non-Trek fan to get them to watch. And we have had an episode about that.
Yes, we did.
And it was specifically Voyager, and obviously, because this is a Voyager show. But in this article, I thought we could talk about these 5 episodes. And right on the top of the list at number 5 is Year of Hell, Part 1 and 2.
Okay. Now, if I recall correctly, we deliberately left that out because we left that out of our list because I think it helps to know more about who the characters are at that point. I think it means more when you know what's been going on as opposed to when you go in with a blank slate.
You're definitely right. I believe that when you know the characters, it has much more emotional impact. I think the argument that this writer's trying to make is that this is a hell of an episode, and this has a lot of action, a lot of intrigue, good plot, good story, good acting. And so I think it kind of shows Voyager at its best. And so when you watch this, you're like, I want to know these characters.
Okay, that is a good argument. I definitely see the merit in that, and you could very well be right. Like, oh, wow, this is a really good show. Mm-hmm. But then you might also be showing them the height of Voyager.
Yes.
A lot of people, you know, you're showing them the best. It's sort of like movie previews where they put all the good parts of the movie in the preview. And then you think, oh, my God, that's such a good movie. I'm going to go see it. You go to see it. And then everything else is crap.
Yeah, so it's just downhill after that. Like, once you see Year of Hell, you know.
So
I see what you're saying. I get that.
I don't know if I would show Year of Hell, but what else is on this list?
Number 4 is from Star Trek Enterprise, and it's Similitude.
Okay.
Now, I have tried so hard to get my wife, aka the girl, into Star Trek, and I just can't do it. Like, and these episodes, Like most of the episodes on here, I've tried with the girl and it just didn't work. And Similitude was one of the first ones because I thought, this is a great story. For those of you who don't know, Trip, the engineer, gets into an accident, goes into a coma, and the only way they can fix him is if they have a donor to give, I think, like a piece of his, like the cerebellum or a piece of his brain. I can't remember exactly. Like there's some sort of surgery where he needs a body part that only exists if he had a twin. And so the doc is like, I kind of have a method to make him a clone. It's not exactly ethical or legal, but I can do it. And so this clone of Trip is like gets born and raised within like a couple of weeks or maybe a week. And so he goes from a infancy to maturity in that week, and they get to know him, they get to love him. But the thing is, they have to kill him in order to save Trip. And it's very, very Tuvix-esque.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Because as some listeners may know, I've not seen all of Enterprise. I have not seen this episode. This is Tuvix with a twist.
Yeah, I won't tell you how it ends then, because it's okay. It's a great episode. It has to be one of the best episodes of Enterprise, and I love it. But the thing is, in the first 5 minutes, you see Scott Bakula's horrible acting. And so
I know you don't like him.
My wife is like, really? You're going to make me watch this? And so she couldn't get past the opening credits because she's like, this is horrible.
Well, she knows what good acting is, and so...
Yeah, she's a drama director. She's a theater director, right.
So she knows her stuff.
She knows her stuff, and so she just can't handle it. And I love Enterprise, and I love Archer, but I can't, like...
Just Scott Bakula.
There's some bad acting in Enterprise. Mm. And so anyway, we'll move on to number three, okay. Which I always thought was a general, yeah, of course... Like, everybody loves this episode. Why wouldn't they? This is one of the best episodes of all time. And that's The Inner Light in The Next Generation. But the thing is, apparently there's some pushback. Like, it's kind of like when a movie does really, really super successful. I don't know, like Avatar. Like, it was really... Or Titanic. Like, it was really fashionable to hate on Titanic or hate on Avatar.
Yes.
Just because it was popular. And I feel like that's kind of what you get with The Inner Light.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a group of Star Trek fans who say, oh... It's not that great. And I think you're right. I think it's the fact that it got so big, so popular, so well known that you kind of have like the goth kid reaction where I didn't think it was that good, just to be different.
Yeah, 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 exactly. I feel like that's kind of the reaction. I'm sure there's people at home screaming like, no, I don't like it because of this reason and this reason. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And you know what? All those reasons are valid. There are reasons not to like that episode, but... I would still say, by and large, the majority holds this one up pretty high.
I think so, too. And I think this is great because a lot of the things on this list don't have a lot of technobabble, and it's very story-driven and very character-driven.
I think that's got to be a good reason why. You're not going to lose a new person.
And number two, I was really surprised because I thought number two was going to be number one because everyone puts this as number one because they have to, but it's City on the Edge of Forever.
Of course, yes. In fact, when I was getting together with my husband and I tried really hard to make him watch Star Trek as well, and like with your wife, I really can't get him into it that much. He has watched some of the movies with me, a couple of episodes. This was one that I showed him and he was just, yeah, it was good.
Yeah, all right. I felt the same way, even as a Star Trek fan, where I was like, yeah, no, City on the Edge of Forever, that's good.
I love City on the Edge of Forever. I really do think it's a great episode of science fiction, not just Star Trek.
Yes. Yes, you could, like, if you took out the Star Trek element, you could see this, like, in a 1950s serial or, you know, written in a magazine. You could see it as a novel.
Sure.
Just, yeah, I mean, this could be anywhere, and it would do well because it's just a great story.
Right, exactly. It's just good storytelling,
yeah.
Period, and you can't ever go wrong with that. So I do think that is a good choice. But what's number one?
Number one, because what's the one show that we haven't talked about yet?
DS9.
That's right. And number one is The Visitor.
Okay. I don't know if it deserves number one, but this is a good episode.
I'm thoroughly surprised that it was put as number one by this, the person who wrote this article. Because this is like, this wasn't a poll. This wasn't like a survey or anything like that. This was one man's opinion. And I'm very surprised that it made number one. I love this episode. But
me too.
I it's one of my favorites in Deep Space Nine. But I don't know if I'd put it as number one.
Yeah, like, you know, for someone who is absolutely going in with a clean slate, doesn't know anything about the show, this might be a good choice to show him, just because there's so little about the show you actually do have to know to get it, because it's so different.
Right.
And it is extraordinarily well written. It has fantastic acting with Tony Todd. But I don't know if it's number one. I mean, it's certainly top 10. But I have problems with this.
Well, let's take out the order. Let's not say this is 5 through 1 or 1 through 5 or anything like that. Let's just say this is the best episode from each series, you know, to give. So, like, number 5 wasn't number 5 because it was Voyager. It was just that's what he chose to how to list it.
All right. That does make that better. But is it still your number 1 for DS9?
Well, here's the thing. Is that my favorite episode of all time with Deep Space Nine is In the Pale Moonlight. And I think that is a fantastic episode. It's gloriously written, fantastically acted. But the thing is, I've shown it to non-Trek fans before, thinking like, okay, well, this one's very talk-driven, not a lot of techno-babble. You know, people will be able to connect to it and just see it as a great story. It's failed every single time.
And I think I know the reason why.
Go ahead. Why do you think the reason is?
Because you have absolutely no context.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. They have no idea what's going on. They don't know what Romulans are. They don't know what the Dominion War is or why they should be invested in it. They have no idea about Sisko and how Starfleet, like his Starfleet upbringing and his training would make him conflicted to do these things. He's just another corrupted politician in their minds. You know, like they would have no idea.
Yes. Yeah, I think without any prior knowledge of the series, that is how you have to take it at face value. It's hard for us to see that because we do know what's going on. But to an outsider, yeah, this would not be a good one to show them, because you do have to know so much about why everything is the way it is in that episode to really appreciate it. And I think, yeah, for us as fans, absolutely, it's a fantastic episode. But to somebody brand new, no.
Yeah,
so absolutely. Maybe in that maybe that does justify the Visitor as the DS9 pick.
And one person's criticism that I noticed on the comment section was that all of these were like episodes where it was a reset button at the end. Like Year of Hell was a reset button, didn't really happen. Yeah. Inner Light was all in his head. City on the Edge of Forever was a timeline, like it was a time travel episode where, you know, they had to fix it. And the Visitor was that way too, where they had to reset and go back. And so it's kind of funny because some people were saying like, well, this doesn't give you a good feeling of the show. This isn't show. Inner Light is not like your common next gen episode. And City on the Edge of Forever is not what an original series episode is really like. But it's not the thing to say, like the writer was like, but we're not making a list to give them a feeling of the episode. We're trying to pique their interest and, make them want more.
Okay, that's great, because I was thinking the same thing where that was a criticism I had of that list as well, but with the goal of piquing interest in mind, yes, successful. Good picks.
Yes. All right, well, we spent a good deal of time on that one, and right now I'm making a proclamation. My wife and I'm going to force my wife to have a marathon of these episodes, and it's going to be good, and it's going to be golden.
Okay, you're going to have to follow up with us and let us know how that goes, because I would love to know what she thinks after you sit her down and watch him. And this is completely relevant in my life right now, by the way, because my in-laws last night were watching Star Trek with me, something I never thought would happen. Like, I know my mother-in-law watched the original series way back when, but my father-in-law especially has absolutely no interest in sci-fi. They watched 4 episodes with me last night of Voyager.
That's amazing. I love hearing stories like that. Absolutely.
It was completely amazing. So, anyway, we need to get to the real topic at hand, that is saddest moments of Voyager.
You and I are so resistant to it because we're like, these are sad. Like, we don't want to relive some of these moments.
It's true. Yeah, I mean, sad moments, it's emotional, and we try to bring energy and we try to be upbeat onto the journey. And now, well, let's try not to be total downers. Let's get into it. Kick us off, Tristan. What is one of the saddest moments on Voyager?
All right. Well, this is the first one we're talking about, and this is very strategic as to why I'm bringing this up and get it out of the way right away, because we just talked about it not too long ago, and that's the Doc's child's death in real life.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we just talked about this a couple weeks ago.
And we don't need to go into too terrible depth, but the thing is, for those of you who haven't heard that episode where we did a... it was a commentary on real life, and we talked a great deal about it. The Doc creates a holographic family, and it's not real enough, so B'Elanna programs it to be a little bit more random and real, a little bit more realistic, and it culminates to his daughter having an accident on the Parisi Square court, hitting her head, and she dies from hitting her head, and there's a very tragic death scene where the whole family's around her deathbed. And the Doc just can't handle it. He just has a very emotional reaction for obvious reasons. We were talking about a couple of weeks ago about how you and I were getting choked up and we don't even have children. So I can't even imagine what it would be like for a parent to see that scene or even go through something, because that is the most traumatic event that a person can go through as a parent.
Yeah, I believe so. I think if you're trying to empathize as a parent to that scene, you're probably about in as much duress as you can possibly have. That's got to be the single worst thing that could happen.
Yeah, it's a person's ultimate fear. And the beauty of the scene is Robert Picardo's acting and how he makes you feel what he's feeling. He illustrates to a very good degree of how he's experiencing it. And so you empathize even if you don't have children.
Right. Yeah, good pick.
Thank you. So that's mine. I wanted to get out of the way, but I couldn't ignore it.
Yeah, I think the list would be incomplete without that moment.
All right, so what's your first pick?
Okay, my first pick, in no particular order, because I've got a whole page here.
Yeah, mine are in no particular order either.
Okay, how about the ending of Course Oblivion? I mean, there is no happy ending here. A version of the crew dies!
The ending is the penultimate version of everybody dying, but then, like, what's really sad about the episode is just, like, you see everybody go one by one.
Yes.
And yeah, you see Janeway Janeway die at her post. You know?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Not only do you visibly see them just withering away, increasingly looking worse and worse and worse, and then they expire. But then, like, what really clinches this, though, is the fact that by the time the real Voyager comes around, they're just debris. They are forgotten. The only people who know about them is us.
Yeah, that's the tragic part.
Yes.
And that is what makes this one of the saddest moments in Voyager, is like, you know, you didn't feel like crying. You weren't trying to hold back any tears or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It was just tragic in it when you deeply think about it. You're like, they had an existence. They had a purpose. They, you know, as far as they were concerned, they were real people.
Yeah, and they're gone now.
And they're gone. And, like, right. their probe didn't even make it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, this is so, like, atypical of a Star Trek episode. Usually there is some salvation to take away from even the saddest of episodes, but not this one.
Yeah, there's some hope at the end. There's some glimmer where it's just like, oh, well, everybody died, but the baby survived. You know, like you know, something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. That's what really gets me, is just the fact that it is so tragic. There is no happy ending. There is no salvation whatsoever. They are just gone.
Very pessimistic ending in episode. Yes, very much.
Yeah, but that's also why I like it. I wouldn't want to see that every single week. But when they did it this one time, yeah. Okay, so what's your next pick?
My next one is Dark Frontier 515/16, and that is the moment. And this is a very finite, specific moment. It's the moment where Seven sees her father as a Borg.
Oh, hey, good one. I did not have this on my list. I didn't even think about it.
That moment when he starts to walk forward amongst the other drones, and we see the face and we're like, hey, we know that face. And then Seven, not Annika Hansen, Seven recognizes him and says, Papa. Oh.
Oh, Oh, that yeah, okay, breaks my heart just bled. Just, oh, stab, stab, stab. Oh, that is a heartbreaker.
Yeah.
Ooh, Jerry Ryan has a couple of those moments throughout the series. I'm going to mention one later.
Yeah, yeah, there are those moments when the Borg mystique drips away and we see a little glimmer of humanity seep out. Like that moment in Drone when the Borg one dies or is dying and she mm-hmm. says to him that he's hurting her. You're just like, oh my gosh, I can't handle it. I can't handle it.
Yeah, the way that she's saying that line, you're hurting me. It's so tender and vulnerable. That is on my list, by the way. That's one of my picks.
Let's talk about that. So that's your pick. So
yeah, it stabs me in the heart every single time, no matter how many times I've watched this episode. It's so wrought with emotion. I really feel for her.
Yeah, I'm glad that we're talking about it because I'm like, oh my gosh, well, why didn't I think about this? Yeah, it's a callback. It bookends the relationship because at the very beginning, she's gifting him with knowledge quite literally, and mm-hmm. he just wants to absorb it and absorb and absorb, but she's like her central cortex or whatever is hurting from the data transfer, and she's like no, stop, and then she gets a little bit more feminine, a little bit more human, and just goes, you're hurting me, and it just works for him to stop.
Yeah Okay, so that's a nice little tie-in, those two right there.
Yeah
Cool. Okay, so that was my pick. What is another one of yours?
Another one, second to last, and we're hitting these hard. We don't want to relive.
No trauma, please.
Yeah, this is Endgame, 7:25. Okay. And this is that moment I was telling you on the other side of the room that is, it's a sad moment, but also it's more touching than it is sad, but it had to go on my list. And it's that moment where Admiral Janeway kisses Tuvok on the top of the head before she goes on her mission.
Okay, cool. I'm glad you put this one on here because Endgame to me does not have sad moments. It's so bittersweet. It's a completely different emotion. Endgame cannot make my list.
I don't have as much hatred for Endgame as you or apparently everybody else does.
Oh, not that I'm bitter or anything, no. But okay, I'm glad that this made your list. Again, this ties into a pick, but let's talk about yours first because this is a very touching moment. I agree. Touching is the word here.
This is touching because you see that relationship that they should have spent more time on, and I'm glad that they recognized it in the last episode at least. So with Tuvok has lost his mind, mm-hmm. and Janeway goes to visit him every week, and you could just see the dedication to see him every single week and see him drift into madness, and it's you see this kiss, and it's just very light. It's very just on top of the head. It's not sexual. It's not maternal. It's none of those things. It is just loving. And yes. It's that moment that breaks your heart because you hate to see Tuvok, who is all about the powers of the mind, lose his mind. Mm-hmm. And it breaks your heart to see him that way. But it's also very touching to see these two people interact in that form.
Yeah. What I like about that scene is the context where this isn't the first time Janeway has seen him, mm-hmm. Recently. I have this feeling where she gets together with him at least every couple of weeks, if not every week. And she has gradually seen him decline, her very dear friend. There's a lot of emotional impact in this scene.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Tuvok even said, Janeway only comes on Tuesdays. Today is Thursday. Thus,
yeah,
logic dictates
right.
That you are not Janeway.
Right. He's kind of pulling a little bit of a Rain Man thing there.
And yeah.
What little is left of his organizational ability. That really is tough to watch.
Yeah, it is tough to watch. And I think it's kind of like your moment with Course Oblivion where it's the context that makes it tragic.
Right. Or anybody who has seen a loved one or a friend go through dementia, Alzheimer's.
Yes.
I mean, this is essentially what Tuvok has. It's the Vulcan version of dementia. Just how heart-wrenching and emotional and painful that can be to watch somebody decline like that. So there's also that relatability element, too. Mm-hmm. And, heavy sigh.
Yeah, so what's your next one?
Okay, my next one is, I'm going to tie this into your pick because it's also a Tuvok moment. And it's where Janeway says goodbye to Tuvok in Year of Hell.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It shows, again, that deep friendship that they have that we needed to see so much more of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the episode in general, I mean, it's very emotional, all that this that they're going through. But, I mean, this is, I would say, one of the most emotional moments because of the deep-seated friendship that those two have. It's downright painful for Janeway to say goodbye to him, but she has to let him go.
Right. And the fact that he has a disability now, you know, he can barely
blind.
Take care of himself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's all that too. The fact that he has suffered so many consequences as a result of what they've gone through. And she follow that up with the fact that she's alone essentially on the bridge. And it's just her and Chakotay's watch that he gave her.
Yeah.
Oh, the feels.
But we shift from the sadness to the epic with that one line that she says on the bridge.
You want me to say it, don't you?
I think you know the answer to that.
Time's up. Time's up.
I never get tired of that.
There you go, buddy.
All right. So my next one is a Janeway, another Janeway one. And
okay, let's just keep on segueing, man. This is working.
And it's from the episode Hunters in season 4, episode 15.
Okay.
And I think you know which one I'm talking about. And it's one where Janeway reads the letter from Mark for the first time.
Uh-huh.
And
yep.
there's a couple of moments where they discuss the letter where Janeway discusses the letter with Chakotay, but it's that one singular moment that really gets to me where she first gets it and she's excited because this is the first contact that she's had with Mark in 4 years. And she starts to read it. She's all smiles. And you see her eyes go down the page. And then all of a sudden, the smile turns to a frown. And mm-hmm. you just see it wash over her. And you experience it with her. And
right.
that is why Kate Mulgrew is such a fantastic actress. And I'm mm-hmm. so glad that she's getting recognition, even more recognition today than she did during her days on Voyager, at least for her acting, not just for being on a sci-fi show with Orange is the New Black, because she yeah. deserves her success and she deserves to be recognized for her skills.
She does. I think she will be back at the Emmy Awards. Definitely.
I hope so.
I mean, her performance as Red is just beyond. I have a friend who's watching Orange is the New Black, does not know who Kate Mulgrew is. She never watched Star Trek. She doesn't know who Captain Janeway is. She doesn't know Mary Ryan. She doesn't know any of it. But I was just talking with her the other day. Man, that Kate Mulgrew is an amazing actress. I love her character.
Well,
there
we have
go.
7 years worth of material for you.
Oh, believe me, I've definitely gotten her onto the Kate Mulgrew bandwagon, and I intend to get her on the Voyager bandwagon as well.
Yeah, and as you know, and as the listeners know, I don't like Orange is the New Black, but I watched season one, and the only thing that really kept me going was Kate Mulgrew, because she was amazing in it. I couldn't, even I, who didn't like the show, could not discount her appeal as Red.
Right. Well, and you know what? I think you really ought to try to give season two a chance, because I feel like she's even better in season two than she is in season one. Believe it or not. I know. Just do it! End of debate!
All right.
To use a Janeway quote. Okay, back to Hunters.
Yes.
Yeah, you don't even have to know what's in that letter to know what's going on. That is an incredibly powerful scene. You know what, though? I am going to argue that there are more and better sad moments in that episode than that scene. Because I've got them on my list.
Okay. is that your next one, then?
I'll make it my next one. I actually have a couple. I'm going to tie them in. One's very brief. The other has a little more meat to it. The one that's brief is Tom Paris not getting the message from his father. Because I think that affected him deeply. And I felt bad for him. I wanted to know what his letter said to, and the mystique of that, the mystery, wondering what he did say, of course, kind of leaves you on a little bit of that hopeful note where B'Elanna says, well, you could say that he's proud of you and all that, and that gives you that message of hope, but I really did feel bad. I felt like he deserved it. He needed to hear from it, and we don't get that until much later, but I think the bigger one in this episode is finding out that the Maquis are just gone.
And, oh, yeah.
I mean, this should have been explored so much more, because this was a very big element in Voyager's initial premise, at least. You know, the merging of the Starfleet and Maquis crews, they never really did do enough with that. But this is important to everybody on the ship. And we caught a little glimpse of it with B'Elanna and what mm-hmm. happened with her, and she got depressed and all of that. But we really should have seen so much more. I wanted to know how Chakotay felt.
Yeah.
You know, I think when he's talking with Janeway in the Ready Room, the conversation should have turned. He asks her how she's doing. She should have asked how he's doing.
We did get an entire episode devoted to her, at least one person's reaction, but we should have gotten a group reaction.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're absolutely right. I never really thought about that before. And you're absolutely right. We should have gotten much more of a mourning process. We should have gotten how the group felt and how Chakotay felt and, you know, everything. Yeah.
And I wanted to see the Starfleet officers feeling bad for them. Like, I'm really sorry. This has got to be devastating news for you and all of that. Showing how they have come together as a crew.
Yes.
Did we get it? Nope. Totally dropped the ball on that one, guys. Totally dropped the ball. But maybe that's the saddest thing of all.
There you go. There's the tragedy.
All right. I think we have one more, do we not?
Yes, we have one more.
Okay, hit us.
All right, so this one is one more broken down into two parts. And in my notes, as I'm reading my notes, it says, all of Mortal Coil, season 4, episode 12. And Mortal Coil, for those of you who don't remember, is when Neelix was dead for over 18 hours and Seven revived him using Borg nanoprobes, because you can do that. And mm-hmm. he goes through an existential crisis, and his religion is questioned, his faith is questioned, and he doesn't know if he's going to see his loved ones anymore in the afterlife. He doesn't know if he believes in an afterlife anymore, and so he tries to commit suicide. This happens in Star Trek.
Yeah, powerful stuff.
He tried to commit suicide. I feel like we've only seen this one other time where it wasn't like an alien influence or someone was controlling their mind and tried to walk them off a bridge or anything like that. We only see it one other time, and that's with O'Brien in Deep Space Nine when he almost takes a phaser to his head.
You're right.
After he was in virtual prison for, I think, 20 years.
I think of a regular character, yes, this is true, because I just thought about Captain Terrell in Star Trek II. He committed suicide, but very different reasons.
Well, that was very different reasons, but that's part of that whole alien influence. Like, he had something burrowing in his head.
Yeah, you're true.
I'm talking about, like these people are free of thought, free of will, and they have so much emotional damage that they're actually considering ending their life.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
And so that the premise itself is enough to just bring you down for the entire episode. But there's two moments in particular, and it's his breakdown in the mess hall with Seven.
Oh God!
When she's there to give him a scan or something like that, and he's just on edge. You can just tell he's just not right with himself. He just mm-hmm. can't handle it, and he just ends up screaming at Seven because he needs to focus his anger somewhere, and he's screaming at Seven because she's the one who brought him back. Her technology, her Borg nanoprobes brought him back, and he's like, what gave you the right? I never asked to be brought back. And it's just, oh, you're just like, oh, you should be thankful because you're alive, but you just can't handle it because of your existential crisis. And it's heartbreaking,
right? Oh, it really is. It's hard to watch it. That's a great testament to how good of an actor Ethan Phillips is. I love it when he does anything but funny, happy-go-lucky Neelix,
right?
When he adds some real depth to the character. And Mortal Coil is one of the best examples of just how talented this guy is and just how good of a character Neelix really could have been had they continued doing this, given us more of it. I mean, it's kind of great every now and then when Neelix is the goofy guy, mm-hmm. but there's so much pain in that little soul of his that they could have made him one of the most complex and interesting and emotive characters in all of Star Trek.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you think about it, his past, his entire family was wiped out. His culture was almost erased. Mm-hmm. And then he confronts the person who created the Metron Cascade. And then he was a scavenger for years. And his best friend was sent to prison. And the love of his life is now gone away mm-hmm. from him. Now he has to go through this crisis, and you're just like, there's so much to this character, but then there are times when he's all of a sudden just the guy with the goofy feet.
Right. Yeah. He's so much more than that. So,
yes.
So much more. I really like the deep Neelix.
Yes. Yes, I do too, and I don't think he gets enough love. And so a lot of people hate the rainbow-colored lizard, but there's a lot more to him, and it's hard to deny that. And so the second part of that is that final moment in the episode when he's on the transporter pad, when he's thinking about doing it, and he almost does it. And mm-hmm. Chakotay has to talk him off of the proverbial ledge. And it's Samantha Wildman and Naomi Wildman that essentially brings him back. And it's that sad moment because he wants to do this to himself and he wants to leave his family and friends. But it's that touching moment because he's able to come back and he's able to continue to live and realize that life is worth living.
Yeah, he kind of starts seeing reality again.
Right.
Because, you know, in the wake of the Robin Williams suicide, there's been a lot in the media about, well, what drives people to commit suicide and all that. You have to realize a person cannot be in a correct state of mind to do something like that. You know, they're in a completely alien mindset from the rest of us when we're just going about our day-to-day lives. So when he had that moment of clarity, you saw it, you knew it, and then you realized, okay,
yeah,
he's going to
yes.
be okay. Like, he's coming back. He's coming back.
It's that sigh of relief. It's almost you could almost feel the collective exhale from the audience where you're like, okay.
Yeah, exactly. So I felt like that was very well portrayed, actually. I feel like how that really is. I like how the way you phrase that, too, just really talking him off the ledge. I mean, that I really think that's accurate.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's your last one?
Okay. I think I got to go with the Neelix one. I've got to keep with this little segue theme that we have going through this episode. How about Neelix's goodbye in Homestead?
Oh,
where
yeah.
everyone's lined up in the corridor to send him off. It's touching, and I always think, I'm really going to miss Neelix when I watch this scene. And then, like, fortunately, we don't have that much without him because it's so close to the end of the series, and then he makes a little cameo in Endgame, so he's not really gone.
Yeah.
But to think that he's leaving the ship. Let's say that they did Voyager Season 8, and there's no Neelix?
Yeah.
You know, there are times when I really don't like Neelix, but I would not have wanted the show without him.
Yeah, I'm the same way. There are times when he annoys me, but you know I'm a Neelix apologist, and
it
also kind of makes me the only thing that I think about within like after Homestead is like when you look at like when you watch Renaissance Man, you're like, okay, it's an episode that doesn't have Neelix. I mean, that's happened before, you know, like there's a lot of characters that weren't focused.
Yeah.
But with Endgame, even though we only see him for like 10 seconds in Endgame, all that I'm thinking about is the production, is them filming. It's like, this is the last time that they filmed together. This is the last time that they're doing the show. This is it. They had 7 great years. It's not like, oh, man, we got canceled, you know, or anything like that. It was just like, this is the end of the show.
Got to say goodbye.
And Ethan Phillips isn't there.
I know.
You know, so, like, it makes me wonder, like, did he show up on set and did he hang out just to be there, be with his friends, you know, or did he show up at the rap party? Like, of course he showed up at the party afterwards, but...
Yeah,
like,
he was at the rap party. Everybody
like,
was.
Like, was, you know, was he there during filming? And, like, and if he wasn't, did Kate Mulgrew and Robert Beltran and Jerry Ryan and Robert Duncan McNeil, all of them, did they feel like, you know, where's Ethan? You know, like, why isn't Ethan here?
Right. Of course, they would call him John.
Oh, excuse me. I did not know that.
Yeah, like, you know, screen credit-wise, he goes by Ethan Phillips, but everybody really who knows him, they call him John. He's John.
Ooh, look at you, Miss Insider. Ooh.
I have been to a couple conventions. I've heard them talk before. Okay. But anyway, I have to wonder just kind of what that feeling was on the set, though.
How
bittersweet it might have been. How sad. How final. Because there's that story Kate Mulgrew tells about how they were filming her last lines and it was the absolute last thing they had to do and they were on the set of the bridge. She raps and then all of a sudden they are taking apart the bridge because they have to set up for Enterprise. I mean, that's just it. Okay, that was nice. So long. And she was just like, oh, that's it? We're done.
I didn't know that.
This massive feeling of devastation. I know she has told the story at conventions, so if you go on YouTube, you can probably find it. And this has nothing to do with Ethan Phillips anymore. I'm sorry. But of all people who did stick around and waited for her, Robert Picardo was off the set, kind of waiting for her to finish up. And he saw the look of just kind of devastation and like just that moment hitting her. And he says, okay, Captain, let's go out for a drink.
Oh.
Speaking of sad moments.
I know. I'm getting all verklempt here. I'm just like tearing up my shirt like I can't handle it.
I could just imagine being a fly on the wall and watching that happen. And I would be tears would be in my eyes, for sure.
Yeah, 7 years. I mean, I've never spent 7 years in one place before, like, if you take out my childhood, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, as an adult, I've never spent 7 years at a job, 7 years in a house, nothing like that. So I can't even imagine, like, you know, like, she goes to this bridge every single day for 7 years, almost every single day for 7 years, mm-hmm. and she works there, she made friends there, she, you know... life for 7 years. And then right when they say cut, they start dismantling the set. They can't even wait for you to leave the room.
Yeah, that's the real kicker. Like, could they have just let her go quietly and then done it? It was insensitive.
Yeah, and I'm also thinking about, like, from a technical standpoint, being in production myself, I'm like, what if you need reshoots? Like, what if you do the assemble?
And here's the thing, is I think they were doing, like, reshoots and touch-ups and retakes and pick-ups. All that. That's what they were doing.
Okay.
So this was the end. They knew it, and I know that they have a job to do as the production crew, and they've probably been on the set for 18 hours already, and they just want to go home. I get it. And I know that they had Enterprise on the horizon. But dang!
Yeah, oh. It's rough.
Yeah, my heart aches for Kate Mulgrew in that moment. That had to have been awful. Okay, but enough sad stuff. I don't want to cry. I'm done. So this isn't the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. And you know what? There's so much else going on, and there are happier topics happening. Let's hear a little glimpse about what else has been going on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
And, like, we were so busy, we didn't eat, like, all day. I had a Red Bull around 5 o'clock, right before the parsecs. I could feel my teeth, like, tingling.
Yeah, yeah.
It was weird.
Earl Grey.
He was robbing the bokle, as they say it in Klingon. That's a Klingon word I just made up, just so you know.
I think we could tell.
The Orb.
What I also liked, too, was that Nog said, put that in there too, to Jake, and let people decide. And that just summed up DS9 for me, because DS9 is, you know, we're not going to tell you for sure he's a bad captain, even though obviously I think most people would agree that he was.
To the journey!
Oh yeah, B'Elanna's reading romantic fanfic.
Not everything is fanfic, okay? This
yes,
could
it
be
is.
A legitimate author with a legitimate publisher.
No, this is Klingon Harlequin. You know it is.
Warp 5.
The Orions, there's something really complex going on within their society, and there's a long-term struggle where the women have flipped the table on the men. And how does that all play out? And it's something where I wish Enterprise had gone for 7 seasons and they could have continued to revisit this and we find out more and more.
The Ready Room.
You know, people have seen that image. That image in particular, just that still of her with the Desilu logo over it, is really iconic. Mm-hmm. And in fact, what I discovered is it's not a still. It's probably 26 different stills.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
A number of scenes from especially the end of Into Darkness are sort of lifted and adapted from Wrath of Khan to be used in this story.
Lifted and Google translated into this version.
Literary Treks.
We all know Troy gets all the men that come on, the all the envoys, actually. You notice that she really likes these bad boy envoy men, you know?
She does.
Continuing mission.
How is Spock changing? How is he changed from the moment he met Captain Kirk from the non-mirror universe? What is his ultimate goal?
Axanar, the official podcast.
So basically, you've got this souped-up computer with this lens on the front of it. And because the resolution has increased so much with these cameras, the amount of data coming out of that camera is enormous.
And join us in welcoming aboard Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
I'm really, really glad that you mentioned Parliament Funkadelic. I could not watch this at all without thinking about George Clinton.
Yeah, so, just every time he talks about going to Parliament, I'm like,
yeah. I wouldn't want to go.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows, all 10,000 of them at this point. I mean, we've gone crazy. We've added Mission Log. We have a Patreon campaign going on right now. If you love our shows and you want to help support us, this is a fantastic way to do it. we appreciate every contribution that we get. And this isn't just a one-time thing. This is a regular ongoing thing to show your support for Trek FM, and there are perks in it for you. So go to patreon.com/trekfm and see what all that stuff is about, and we appreciate any potential support that you give us, or if you've already supported us, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you! Also, before we go, we have another thank you to shell out, despite all of that, because we have an iTunes review. Someone gave us 5 stars, wrote us a short review, and that person is CrackerSnacker420. I love that username. That's fantastic. So many thanks to you, CrackerSnacker. If you haven't written us a review yet, please do. We appreciate it so much. It helps us with the iTunes rankings, helps other people find the show, and we give you a shout out on the show, just like we did. And then one more thing before we go, because we got to talk about our sponsor. Without them, these shows are not possible. Let's hear a little bit about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
So, as I mentioned at the top of the episode, we used a listener-submitted topic for this week, and guess what? We're going to do it again next week, and what is that topic going to be?
One thing that happened with Deep Space Nine twice is that they got crew members from TNG. They got O'Brien and they got Worf. Both times it happened very successfully. And so you and I next week are going to talk about what would it have been like if some characters from The Next Generation or Deep Space Nine, or even just side characters from Star Trek, made their way onto Voyager before they left Deep Space Nine.
So until then, everybody, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!